on The Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
All right, we're very excited to get a chance to talk to a local resident who is an author, first-time author. I think you will find it a most interesting story. You might have known her or her husband before, but you'll know them a little bit better after we've had this chance to talk. We're talking today to Michelle Adams. Her new book is My Life, Bits and Pieces, and it's available online.
And okay. You can go to Amazon.com and type in Michelle C. Adams to order a copy.
Let me say that after reading your book, that I would like to be able to call you an overcomer, because you overcame some very difficult situations, personal situations, health situations. You share these very frankly and unsparingly with us, so that you're not making yourself sound like a hero or a heroine in the book. But after reading the book, that's the way I've come to regard you. So I'd like to say thanks, first of all, for making time to talk to us, but even more so, having the courage to write about your life situations and knowing that other people can draw inspiration and encouragement from them.
Okay, I appreciate this.
What inspired you to write the book?
I have for many, many years been journaling and writing my thoughts and feelings down. So I thought I would just put them all together and read a little bit at a time, and thought maybe I could write a book. And I've been through so much in my life, and not only have I overcome them, not go through them, but up and down, up and downs, and God has been with me the whole way, because if it wasn't for the Lord, I wouldn't be here today. But I'm pretty sure that there are several people, maybe many out there, that have been through what I went through, or maybe still going through, or walking through in my shoes, that maybe my book could reach someone, let them know that, listen, you know, what you're going through, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay, because, you know, God's with you. If you don't know God, then He is still with you no matter what. I had thanked Dr. Dye, Judy Dye, which was one of my professors at the universities, and she said, wow, your life was a roller coaster. And I said, yes, very much so. But the up and downs, I made it through when I really thought I had no hope. I kept pressing on, and it wasn't just me. It was the Lord. I am a Christian, a godly woman. I give all the glory to the Lord. I thank Him for all the trials and errors I went through, because I'm here today to prove that those who have read my book and read what I've went through, been through, and I'm still going through some issues, health issues and whatnot, but that's okay, because God is with me.
Let's talk specifically about some of those things. One of the things that struck me, first of all, you lived a pretty good amount of your life at the Alabama Baptist Children's Home here in Troy. All sorts of reasons that people came to live at the Children's Home. Sometimes they were actually orphaned. Sometimes there was a family situation where it was safer or simpler for them to be there. And you talk about that, what your life was like before you came to the Alabama Baptist Children's Home and how it developed. So give us a little bit of those early stories of your childhood that led up to moving into the Children's Home.
Okay. I believe it was 1976. I was living with my mom. Of course, she was divorced and was involved with a guy friend, not knowing he had an alcoholic problem. It was a really hard experience, because I was in elementary school and I witnessed the abuse. He did not abuse me or my siblings, but before the Children's Home, I witnessed my mother getting beaten by her significant other, and it was just very devastating. And of course, I did write it down in my journal. I've written everything down before the Children's Home, my experience. My mother was not abusive. She was not an alcoholic, drug user, or any of those sorts. She was just did not know how to be a mother. She neglected us. It was constantly get out of my hair kind of thing. I don't want you under my feet. So anyway, my siblings and I just decided, okay, so we would just wander to the streets and just play and find something to do until, you know, the sun went down, and we stay out of her hair. But leading up to the Children's Home, after my mom was brutally abused. She had called our pastor of the church we attended sometimes. It was my siblings and I. A lot of times my mother did not. She wouldn't make us go to church.
Right.
But anyway, so she called the pastor and he told her, I have a safe place that we can take your children.
Essentially, you guys were sort of raising yourself. Oftentimes, even you prepared meals for the other kids and all. And so the opportunity to be in a place that was going to be safe and you were going to have clean clothes and regular care and so forth must have seemed like an extraordinary event for you. And you were fortunate in that one of the families that you were most influential to you and loved you really like you needed to be loved early on as parents, that your stories about them are really wonderful. And unfortunately, you didn't get to stay with them permanently, but you did have a good relationship with them. Now, tell us about them.
Their names were Ben and Louise Vinson, and we were members of First Baptist Church here in Troy, Alabama. And the experience with them was just incredible. The love they offered, the attention I got from them, the hugs, the words, I love you. I never got that with my mom, which, like I said, she really didn't know how to be a mom. And plus, she had her own childhood, a really bad childhood experience. But anyway, the love that I felt, I couldn't fathom any other love from the two. And as I was growing up at the children's home with them, I was devastated when I came home from school. I think it was maybe ninth grade. I'm not quite sure, but anyway, they were gone. And of course, my heart just was ripped to pieces. I was so in love with them, and they were just the greatest Christian-loving house parents I have ever had. It just really tore me apart when they left me. I felt like they left me. But at one time, before this occurred, they wanted to adopt me, but my mother wouldn't let them. I did not understand why, because she couldn't raise me. So I was a bit furious with that, and but I continued living at the children's home and just got all the love I could get. New clothes, which my mom always bought me clothes from yard sales, but it was fine. You know, we were clothed, we were fed, just not cherished. My mother didn't know how to love us, touch us, hug us, say the three words, I love you. And I got all that from the children's home. And the food, I've never seen so much food. And the first time I had dinner when I first was there the first night, I just couldn't believe all the food. And it was just amazing. I just felt like, wow, this is just the greatest place ever. Even though I was in fifth grade, I was so excited. I did miss my mom. But then again, I felt so safe at the point that I really didn't care for her at that time.
That's pretty understandable, considering the situations that you'd had endured up to that point. There was one time that you actually got taken back to your home for a while and then came back to the children's home. There was a point where you met your future husband. And this is a lovely, lovely story. And so we're going to let you know, in case you're joining us late, that we're talking to Michelle C. Adams of Troy, Alabama, and her brand new book is My Life, Bits and Pieces, and it's available online, and it's very reasonably priced as well. And it tells of really difficult childhood and an adolescence, how through the love of God that Michelle persevered. And I should say, too, that obviously John had a lot to do with helping you to become fully actuated as an adult as well. It's a very sweet and very patient courtship that you guys had. Tell us a little bit about that, how you guys first met. And at one point, you're living with his parents and everything, and he's not living there. And I just find that this really lovely and charming. So tell us about that.
John and I met in high school. I was in the youth choir at First Baptist Church, and my husband John was in the youth choir at Brundage United Methodist Church, and we met at some restaurant when we were in high school, and we started dating, and we dated, I think, our sophomore year through college, and then engaged a year. I think we've been together 30 years, maybe.
He's giving us a thumbs up.
Yes, right. But yes, John and I grew up together. He is such a godly man, and he has helped me grow through all this. He's been with me every step of the way. Never left my side when I had all my issues, and which, of course, my issues are out there because this is a small town. It's just been really, really hard, but John's been really patient and caring and loving and understanding and the best shoulder to cry on. And we did date in high school. We were both a little shy, short of words, until my best friend would join us, which she brought laughter to all of our conversations. It's just been one roller coaster after another, but John has never gotten off of it. He's been with me the whole time.
Let me ask you about something that's another one of the painful memories, and that is one of the struggles that you have had is with anorexia. And I must admit to you that when I first found out about anorexia, Karen Carpenter was diagnosed with it back in the late 1970s. And I had been a huge fan of, and we were just flabbergasted to learn the details of anorexia, that she could be not overweight at all. And yet in her mind, when she saw in what she saw in the mirror was not what was reality. To help us to understand, what is that like? Is that kind of what it was with you too? When you look in the mirror, you thought, oh, I wish I could lose this weight. And there really was no weight to be lost. But in your mind and your self-perception that had been damaged by all of the turmoil as a child, is that sort of how, because this was an ongoing thing for some years, right?
Yes, sir. I had an eating disorder for 16 years, and I just wanted to lose a couple pounds or so. I remember my 10th year class reunion, I believe, and I just wanted to lose weight. Reunion ended. I continued exercising, dieting, omitting things from my diet, and then it just kept going on, and I kept losing weight. And then I believe it was 1996, my best friend got killed, and I just really died with her. My heart just was devastated, and I just wouldn't eat. I was so depressed, in and out of hospitals for help. I really didn't know what to do, except I wanted to just die. And of course, having an eating disorder is a slow, slow death. So I did wanted to die back then. It was just really hard for me. And to find peace and help me to continue living, I just kept running. Running was my escape. I ran in 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons, one marathon. I just thought, I don't know how to control my life. I'm in and out of hospitals. John wanted to help me. I did not know what to do. And finally, I just gave up and said, I'm going to do what Michelle wants. Finally, I'm going to be in control. It's me. So I did what I wanted to do. I didn't eat. I kept running to occupy my mind. I couldn't figure out why my best friend was taken from me. It hurt so bad because she's like a sister to me. We grew up together at the children's home since 1976, I believe. Been friends for many, many years. And when John and I got the call when we moved to Mobile, I could not breathe. I hit the floor. It was just devastating. And then I got really worse. I just would not eat, period. And I was on so much medication to help me function, to wake me up, help me sleep. John's parents were there for me. It was just really a hard experience, and for me to not understand the circumstances behind her death, I did what I thought I could do the best, was just run from it all and just keep running. And just do what I could do on my own because I wanted to be in charge.
I would say that most of us have the same sort of reaction to great loss like that we want to have some feeling that since we haven't been able to control that situation, we want to be able to control some situation. And it's not unusual for guys, we tend to become workaholics in situations like that. You can always throw yourself into your work. And one of the things that does, if guys do that, is that we tend to be inaccessible to our family because families are messy and complicated and you can't really fix them, but you can fix work. So that's what you do. And in your case, you do the same thing with running. Running's simple. You put one foot in front of the other. There's not a lot of complication. There's not a lot of fancy equipment. You're just out there running. It's you and the wind and all of that. And that seems like a really good way to deal with it. And it probably was, on one level, that it probably was helpful for you. But the problem was, on top of everything else, it just exacerbated the weight loss, right?
Yes, I did lose quite a lot of weight. I actually didn't know that I was losing the weight until John and a co-worker of his, when he worked at Troy State University, brought me into an office and talked to me and told me and showed me, of course, a runner that was a student at Troy State who was also anorexic and wanted me to look at him, and I didn't see it. I thought, no. So I walked out, shut the door, and I said, I'm fine. That's not me. I'm fine. But actually, I wasn't fine because it led to so many health issues. And of course, years later, I'm having to deal with the circumstances I put myself in from having an eating disorder, not only anorexic, but I was bulimic. I'm not sure if I mentioned that in my book, but anyway, that led to that as well. And seeing a nutritionist in Birmingham was hard. I didn't like it. Well, no one would, but anyway, he wasn't a nice doctor. But anyway, he gave me so much homework, you know, what to eat and whatnot, and weigh me backwards on the scale. The nurses did. And like I said, I was in and out of so many hospitals getting treatment for my depression, from losing my best friend, and my eating disorder. And it just didn't suit me, and I kept checking myself out of each place. And so John, finally, my husband, found a counselor here in Troy years ago, and she helped me. I say it a little bit. It didn't cure me, but I had to meet with her, I think once a week for several years. I listened to her some, but then I kind of blocked her out because I wasn't eating, so my mind wasn't functioning well. Because you have to feed your body, you have to feed your mind so you can function.
Right, your brain needs food.
Exactly, yeah. Like my husband says, car needs gas to run. Same with your body. So yeah. I don't recommend, trying to lose weight and continue, but it happened, and I just kept doing it and doing it, and I was anorexic for 16 years, like I've mentioned in my book, but now I'm doing much better. But it had taken a long time for me to get well. It's just a really hard trying to deal with issues from your past, from my past, excuse me. But writing my book, I want to help someone, maybe just one person. There may be many that I could help that have bought my book, purchased it, and read it and thought, you know, maybe I could get something out of this. I know how she feels. I'm feeling the same way. So that's my purpose. I like helping people. I like being there for them and letting them know that life will go on even though there are trials and errors, because I was led through all this by the grace of God.
We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Michelle C. Adams, the author of My Life, Bits and Pieces, It's available online. It's a powerful story, and there is a level of honesty in it that you rarely find in books. You let us be privy to all these secret things, and I know this is a small town, and I've lived here a long time, but honestly, I have to say it in defense of people that when I would ask about you, because we just started going to church together 2 years ago, when I would ask, I see Michelle's on the prayer list, and the answer would always be,
it's not COVID.
It's puppet's dust. We had puppet practice yesterday, and they were so dusty, and it's got my allergies so messed up. I'm sorry. Okay, nicely, I can edit that out. All right, so when I would say, oh, I see that Michelle is on the prayer list again, there's something specific, and the answer I always get is, well, she's just had a lot of issues, and we just need to pray for her. And I said, well, okay, then. I can deal with that. And then getting to read about the background of these issues is illuminating, but also it's a very brave thing. And it can't be easy to write it, but it's not easy to talk about either. And I know this is not the easiest thing that you've ever done, but you're doing great. And I appreciate the fact that John is sitting here and keeping an eye on you. I have the feeling that that's what he does all the time. And that is a lovely, lovely thing. The overriding message that I get from your book is that your life can have and will, everybody's life has difficulties, but some difficulties are enormous, and yet God does not leave us bereft. He has not abandoned us, no matter how much we feel abandoned at times. And that is what comes shining through your book and what we're talking about now, too, that you knew that God was there with you even when your life was really difficult, that you knew that you weren't in it alone, and that makes such a difference. And that might be the thing that makes the most difference. Is there anything else that you wanted to share with us about particular people that you, if you want to talk some more about your best friend or about your siblings that your regular blood siblings? Do you talk to them or get to visit them or anything?
My sister died going on 10 years ago, October 25th. I do speak to my two brothers. My mom is living in an assisted living home in Alexander City, and John and I have been there several times to visit. And matter of fact, she helped me a little bit put my pieces together because I kept going here from there, and she would share things with me to help put in my book. And thinking about my two brothers, they did not stay at the children's home. Of course, my sister didn't either. She married young. But I wanted to stay there because I knew I was safe. Yeah. I didn't want to be in that old environment with my mom constantly getting abused and my siblings and me being neglected, which we weren't abused. We weren't beaten. We were just
ignored.
Yeah. And go away was my mom. And so it really was a big change, and knowing that I wish that my siblings would have stayed at the children's home, they would have been better off. Yeah. And they have shared that with me. But you know, you choose the life you choose, and therefore they stayed with my mom and kept witnessing what she was going through, and it was devastating. They had shared stories with me, and I just cried. But I prayed to God. Thank God, I broke the chain. I got out of there. I'm safe. I'm in Troy. I'm being loved, taken good care of, and not having to see the abusiveness. But yes, my brothers and I do stay in contact.
I remember from your book that the man who was pummeling your mother eventually came to faith in Christ, and your mom did too, and they got married, and you guys had an opportunity to build some more of a relationship after that point than you had earlier. And that's encouraging too. And not anything that you particularly expected, so it was kind of a nice surprise.
Yes. My mom and I reunited after my sister died almost 10 years ago. But my mom married her friend before he became a Christian and dedicated his life and became a deacon of their church. And I was still afraid of him because in my book I had mentioned he came to get me. Yeah. I mean, he snuck up on me, per se.
Yeah.
And it frightened me because when I saw his face, all I can see was, okay, he's going to get me next.
Right.
I was a little girl, and of course, I had to do what he said.
Yeah.
Get my things and let's go. We're going to be a family. And I had to do what he said, but I didn't want to. And I was just so devastated, taken from my safe place.
Yeah.
The love, the food, the clothing, the safe place is what I call it, the children's home. And I've learned so much from living there, being raised there. And years ago when that happened, I just didn't know what I was going to do. And when my mom sarcastically said, we're going to be a family, and it's in my book, I just refused. And I said, no, I don't want to be here. And the abuse kept continuing with him, with my mother and her husband because she married him. But we children, my siblings and I, weren't beaten or talked to. They were in their own little area, and, you know, he wanted her all to himself. And so I guess my mom decided after some point that, well, Michelle's not eating, she's not doing well, I really think that she needs to go back to the children's home. And so she made a phone call to the children's home, and I think she spoke with one of the social workers, and he came and got me that day. I packed my suitcase as quickly as I could, and I just jumped in the back seat even when he was not even in the car yet.
Yeah.
So I do remember, I believe, thanking her, which that was the second time she saved my life, because the beating kept continuing. He kept drinking. This was before, of course, he accepted Christ in his life. And I'm so sorry I didn't get to know him as a godly man. But I was afraid of him, and I didn't know. I didn't stay in contact with my mom.
Yeah.
So therefore, I didn't know he had changed for the better.
Yeah.
I was just thinking he's still the same, and I don't want to be near him anymore.
Well, I will say this, that what you have said in your book and what you have shared with us while talking to us today certainly emphasizes one very important thing, and that is that the Alabama Baptist Children's Home did a magnificent work when they were located in Troy. They still have a home that's open in Dothan, and First Baptist Church Troy has a relationship with them, and I think that's a wonderful thing. And if people want to find out more about the Alabama Baptist Children's Homes, they could just contact the church, and they can put them in touch with the right people. But I think it's not an overstatement to say that they saved your life, and in a lot of ways restored your soul. So thank you very much for being with us today and for so candidly sharing your life with us. And I do think it's going to help people. I do think it's going to encourage people. And they're going to say, you know, if she can do this, then maybe I can too. That makes it worth it, doesn't it? Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on The Bookshelf. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and your favorite podcast. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.